We'll talk more about Ed Bradley's legacy and the latest political developments with our roundtable. Joining us today from member station WCLK in Atlanta, Georgia, economist and author Julianne Malveaux. She's the president and CEO of Last Word Productions. And from the studios of Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. Finally, Nat Irvin, president of Future Focus 2020 and professor at the Babcock Graduate School of Management in Wake Forest University, joins us from member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So let's start out with Ed Bradley. Thank you all for joining us. And I have to say he really was one of my personal heroes. And I guess, Nat, I'll start with you. I mean, what do you recollect about him?
Well, first of all, Farai, I think that he was an extraordinarily versatile human being, a man who was gifted with the ability to be able to look into other folks' souls and then share that with a larger audience. I think one of the things that just that America and the world should recognize is just how difficult it is, how rare it is to be able to produce a person of the quality of Ed Bradley. You know, a graduate of historically black college and university who had parents who told him that he could be anything, and then he did. He rose to the heights of his profession, earned the respect and admiration not only of his peers, but of all people who watched him as he shared his insights with us through 60 Minutes. And the final thing is this, that with Ed, there came a certain authenticity. And authenticity is just something that you cannot fake. It's something that people actually come to a certain point and assign to you. We will say to you after a certain point, when you do an interview, we will feel as if that you have done that person justice. Whether we agree with what that person is doing or has said or however they've conducted their lives, Ed was able to convey to the audience that or to a person who would sit with him that I am going to be fair with you. What an enormous gift and ability that Ed Bradley had.
Julianne?
You know, it's a great loss of Ed Bradley's death. And at the same time, as Nat said, it reminds us of how far we've come. One of the things I'd read about him quite some time ago, actually, is that when he joined the CBS newsroom, there were three people of color in the newsroom. And this was what was striking. He knew who the other two were. One was a guy named Gus Sancir, who was the brother who swept. And the other was a brother named Willie Thresh, who was a radio tech. Now, that he, in his position, would have taken the time to know those brothers does speak to the totality of the humanity of the man. So many people get to a position that they don't see the people around them. Those are, quote, the little people. But also, it does speak to how far we've come. You don't go into a newsroom anymore and find just three people of color. I might footnote there were no women among that group. But in any case, this was a brother who humanized Timothy McVeigh. You know, he actually, and the only journalist to have an interview with Timothy McVeigh, he was one of the first to get down to the Gulf Coast after Katrina hit New Orleans. His profile on Lena Horne, I have taped somewhere, which is just like phenomenal. And because she's a personal shero of not mine, and of course, a member of my sorority. And the most recent work, you know, looking at the Duke case, I mean, for all of our mixed feelings about race and gender in that Duke case, what Ed Bradley did as a journalist that he was to look at that case not as an African-American man, but as someone who was wondering about some of the holes that exist in this prosecution. So I had tremendous admiration for his work, had the honor and privilege of having met him on occasion, not at all in any close quarters, but the hello. And he was always very gracious to people. NABJ, of course, gave him the Lifetime Achievement Award last year. And the NAACP, among others, have talked about just the tremendous contribution he made. We know that it was a tremendous contribution. What a trailblazer, and how privileged we all were to have been anywhere in his stratosphere.
NABJ, of course, the National Association of Black Journalists. Mary, you know, I don't know if this is where you want to go in talking about him, but one thing
wherever you want me to go.
No, I mean, I want you to give your thoughts, but one thing that always struck me about him was his demeanor and his style. You know, he had a little earring, and people talked about that for a while. He was always so pulled together, but in the way that he wanted to be.
Right, and he was not afraid to be himself.
Exactly.
And what I always admired about him, I admired that he was not afraid to be himself. I admired the fact that he was not ashamed to be a black man in the world and wasn't pushy about it and was not ashamed to be himself and liked being himself. And also what I like, of course, he's probably the most famous graduate at Cheney has ever had, university, or probably any historically black institution. He's among those. But I also like the fact that in every field, there's got to be somebody who is the first person to prove to people who don't believe black people can do things that they can do them and do them as elegantly and as well and as competently as anybody else and without really making waves in public as an example. And that's what is path-breaking. And he was an excellent, outstanding journalist, as somebody who's kicked around being a journalist when I was younger myself. The guy was amazing, and there's nobody in the field who can say that he was not amazing. And so that is the reason why he was a path-breaker for so many others.
You know, I want to kind of merge this with another thing that's on our radar, which is that the Los Angeles Times editor Dean Baquet was forced out of his position following a dispute with the Tribune Company over cost cuts. And although I think it was you, Julianne, who said, you know, it's a reminder of how far we've come, at the same time, you know, the news business, which, you know, I'm certainly in and you all are in, at least on some level, it's not an easy place to be in at this point in time. There's a lot of changes going on. And African-Americans' kind of fortunes, we go up and down with the fortunes of the business. So do we really think, and you know, I guess anyone can chime in on this, you know, do we really think that we have a solid grounding in having black journalists where we need to be in the business?
You know, African-American people will never have solid grounding in this country until we move closer to the total picture of economic justice. But I would say in this era of corporate consolidation, which is part of what's happening in the industry for Raya, as you very well know, the question that has to be raised is how many profits are enough profits? I mean, the news business is posting roughly 10% profits, which used to be considered a reasonable rate of return. But when you see Apple posting, you know, 90% profit and Google posting 120% profit, if a news organization is part of a larger corporation whose total goal is profit maximization, then you really never get the news. And all this other sort of independent stuff, the 24-hour cable cycle, which is really not about news gathering, it's just about regurgitation. These bloggers who have, bloggers bring a lot to the table. All of us have had our flirtation, in your case, Rye, some pioneering work with blogging. But the fact is that, you know, you're borrowing the news gathering function from other folks. So that key function of putting information out there is a function I think is being overlooked in this rush for profit maximization. There's no better example of it than what's happened with BET. And you look at the content, where is the news content? I mean, you can watch booty shaking all day long, and you get these little one-minute news snippets that are dropped in, but nothing of the quality of a lead story that went off the air about 3 years ago when BET was sold to CBS.
If I could chime in, I think a couple of things. First of all, Ray Marshall, who used to be Secretary of Labor in the Carter administration, said that whenever black people started to get a toehold in any industry, there was going to be a problem in the industry, and it was probably dying or something. That when we finally were able
that's
to struggle.
That's an awful assessment.
That's what he used to say all the time.
Well,
he said,
Ray
you
Marshall's
should look
a brilliant
out.
Economist, so.
You look out for the signs, he said. And so it affects black people. But it affects everybody, because if you look at the news content that Google puts out, if you go to their news site, it's all from newspapers. If you look at Yahoo, it's all from newspapers. Everybody uses the journalist product. Somebody's got to come up with a model that will permit the information gathering that newspapers do. I don't know what that model is, and I don't know if it feeds directly into the internet or how you do it, but someone's got to do that. And in the meanwhile, there is going to be a devastating effect on journalists in general and on black journalists who are, you know, the last in, the last out, in particular.
Last in, first out. Last
yes,
in, first
last
out.
In, first out, yes.
Yeah. Nat?
Well, I just think what Mary just touched on, well, Julianne and Mary both touched on, and the business model is wrong for new media. I mean, in fact, I think if you look at the advertising agents, advertisers right now describe this as being the era of chaos, where actually, you know, we're caught between, we have so many different, the proliferation of new ways that people can actually gather their news and information. And you got to figure out how to make this profitable. It's not a time where we have three networks, we have 300 networks, and we have so many different ways in which we're trying to get the attention of the consumer. I mean, news, as important as it is to a democracy, there is some profit, there are expenses and costs associated with gathering it. And as Mary pointed out, we don't have the right business model now, but we do have to find it, and people are trying to find it. I think that within the next 10, I wouldn't say 10 years, but I'd say we're in the phase now of trying to find the right market and the right model, and it's probably winds up, we'll get clear about this once we figure out where the consumer is when he or she goes to read news. And I think that means that essentially it's on the Internet. And then maybe after that comes out of it, maybe we'll have more news gathering companies that will become, instead of being public and driven by Wall Street profits, they'll be private. You'll have more concerns. You'll have less concern about the next quarter earnings and more concern about content. But these you know, you can't create a business model without having profits.
All right. Well, we're going to have to, very quickly.
Quick thing. You cannot, as long as you have the role that advertising plays, you cannot talk about, you've got to talk about profit minimization, not maximization, because advertisers frequently wag the dog in terms of what kind of stories get covered. I just think we have to deal with that.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, I think we could have a lot more conversation about the future of African Americans in the media. And we didn't even get to something that I wanted to talk about, which is that Ken Millman, head of the Republican National Committee, is stepping down. But we're going to have to leave that.
Can we just do the happy dance? Can we just do the happy dance?
Oh, that's...
Wait a minute. No, he was great.
All right.
Come on, the happy dance, y'all.
It's going to have to happen next week. Whether or not you believe in the happy dance, that's going to have to happen next week. Julianne, thank you so much. Mary Frances Berry.
Thank you,
Nat.
Farai.
Take care.
Thank you, Farai.